It's Sunday, the 22nd of May, 2016. Happy birthday to Chase Budinger. Show brought to you by Loot Crate and Aid Paid. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be like Aid Paid and have a ripping name, but also be a sponsor of this podcast, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can become that sponsor. So thank you to Aid Paid for his support, or his or her support, throughout the season and in sponsoring this show. If you are watching this show live on YouTube, which you can do with any of the podcasts and any of the shows that I put out there, you can interact with me as we go ahead and do the show by tweeting at me at redrock_bball. You can tweet at me at any time, of course. You can hit me up on Facebook as well. But if you want to do it live, that's the Twitter account to hit up and ask me any questions. We're very much stuck into our season in review podcast at the moment. We're covering off the Minnesota Timberwolves in today's program. There was an NBA game today. The Raptors defeated the Cavs in Game 3 in a game where they looked to have all the answers. But to me, yes, they won, the Raptors. It was great for them. But they weren't dominating enough where I think that they're going to make this a series necessarily. Love was off. Irving was off. Bismack Biyombo had an historically good game, which he won't do again. I'm fairly safe in saying that. And DeMar DeRozan probably won't shoot like that. So the Raptors might get another game back. Good for them to not get swept. But not sure that this really changes the narrative too much in terms of what's going to happen in this Eastern Conference Final. Love to be wrong, but we'll wait and see. Hopefully they get Jonas Valanciunas back for Game 4 as well. Biyombo was great, but he contributed nothing offensively. I think he had 1 point up until the fourth quarter. Ended up with a lot of rebounds, a lot of blocks, and real big defensive presence, but didn't do a huge amount on the offensive end, which Valanciunas can obviously add in. We're not talking too much about that, though. Now we're going to be looking at the Minnesota Timberwolves, possibly, almost definitely the most exciting young team in the NBA. Extraordinary hopes and expectations put on this squad. They improved their record despite the fact that Sam Mitchell was their coach, went to 29-53, and I hung a lot of shit on Sam Mitchell last season, and most of it, I think pretty much all of it, was justified. But to his credit, and I always like to give credit where it's due, he realized the follies of his ways after a couple of months and went with what needed to be done with this team, and that was put your best lineup out there. Put Gorgui Dieng as a starter. Don't put Nikola Pekovic and Karl Anthony Towns together as a starting combo. It won't work. Don't put Nemanja Bjelica out there. Gorgui Dieng is the one who needs to play next to Karl Anthony Towns. Tayshaun Prince, he didn't need to start. He was getting ridiculous amounts of minutes while Zach LaVine was rotting on the bench behind Kevin Martin and Prince. Eventually, though, we got that lineup. We got the best five out there, and they started to win games. They started to look better. And 29 wins is a pretty good result from this team, given they were the worst team in the NBA last season. Mitchell's gone. Tom Thibodeau is now in. He is the president of basketball operations. He is the head coach, and he cleaned house the other day. Basically, everyone has gone from Arne Kanda, the head of the training staff, which a lot of people were saying that's a terrible move. It wasn't necessarily a Thibodeau move. Kanda had to be brought out of retirement to come back as a favor to Flip Saunders last season. He wanted to do part-time consulting from Colorado, which you can't have your head of training staff be a part-time guy that doesn't live at the facility. So that wasn't going to work. Thibodeau will bring in his own guy to that role. He fired Milt Newton, the former GM, as well. Cleaned house. A whole bunch of guys left from this team. So it is definitely a Tom Thibodeau team now. Now, what that means for this team moving forward, you would think that he is going to get the most out of this team. He will improve their defensive ability, and they were one of the worst defensive teams in the NBA last season, despite Tayshaun Prince starting all those games for his defense. Didn't really do much to help, considering he was a zero on offense and was putrid on defense as well. But Thibodeau will get defense out of these guys. And if they don't defend, he will kick their ass out of that team pretty quickly. So there's a couple of guys that's going to be a concern for, namely Zach LaVine and Shabazz Muhammad, but we'll talk about them as we go through this team in a little bit more detail. As I mentioned, they did have the 29-53 record, which is a huge improvement on this team, double-digit win improvement. They have one pick in the upcoming NBA draft, pick 5, which they can get a pretty good player, and you would have to think they'd be looking for shooting with that pick, Jamal Murray would be a great option to me. Buddy Hield is another guy who might be in play there. Some people will be looking for Chris Dunn because they don't believe in Rick Rubio. I'm going to talk about Rick Rubio at length in this podcast, but Dunn is not a terrible option to bring in there, although I do like Tyus Jones. I would be preferring a Jamal Murray, Buddy Hield pick at pick five for the Timberwolves if I had the GM hat, which unfortunately I don't have Tom Thibodeau's job and I don't have his salary. That'd be great. Minnesota, Glenn Taylor, if you are listening, I'm happy to relieve Tibbs if you get tired of him after half a season or anything like that. More than happy to take up the job. Pretty sure he's not listening. Pretty sure he's not going to give a shit whether I want to take the job or not. But anyway, let's get on to talking about this team. But before we do that, we need to have a quick word from today's sponsor. The sponsor is Loot Crate, and they make all of this semi-magic happen, I guess. Loot Crate, if you aren't aware, is a monthly subscription box service. It's for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. It's cheap, it's less than $20 a month, and each month you get between 6 to 8 items, including licensed gear, apparel and collectibles, and unique one-of-a-kind items. You've already missed this month's box, which was a power-themed box, including Marvel items, Dragon Ball Z, Warcraft stuff, but never fear, there's going to be a new box coming out for June, and the guys at Loot Crate, they don't take time off. In this time, between the 19th and the end of the month, they're feverishly sourcing what products they need to put into your box. And that sounds horribly rude, and I didn't mean it to sound that way, but they are box fiends, these guys at Loot Crate. They will fill your box with all the goodies that they can find, and it's going to be fun stuff as well. So lootcrate.com, that's a great website. Fantastic, that's their website, but that's not the website you want to go to. That's for the pretenders. Go to lootcrate.com/redrock, and then you tell the Loot Crate people that you came directly from this show. And if you also do that, then you can also activate my super exciting discount coupon code, which is also RedRock, and save $3 on any new subscription. So it's RedRock at lootcrate.com/RedRock. And then the coupon code is also RedRock. Not that hard to remember, and that saves you $3. You might not buy the subscription for yourself. Buy it for your kids. Buy it for your cousins. Buy it for your nephews. Buy it for your nieces. Buy it for your teacher, buy it for whoever, but check it out by visiting that website, and that really helps to get the brand awareness of Loot Crate out there, and it helps this podcast as well, so I can go back to them and go, hey, look how many of my listeners visited your site. Let's keep this sponsorship going. Let's keep these bright lights shining in my face so I can continue to provide fantasy basketball information. I won't say goodness because half of the stuff I spew probably is shit anyway, but just so I can keep information or fantasy basketball chatter coming your way. So make sure you're checking out Loot Crate and lootcrate.com/redrock. That's the site you want to go to. All right, let's talk Minnesota Timberwolves. And we start, as we've started all of these season in review podcasts, by looking at upcoming pending free agents. And for the Timberwolves, the list is pretty minimal. It includes Greg Smith, who's an unrestricted free agent, and I'm pretty sure no one's going to care whether he's brought back or not. I would doubt that he would be brought back. He didn't provide a huge amount. 36-year-old Tayshaun Prince is an unrestricted free agent. He shouldn't be back. He didn't provide much at all. He was the worst starter in the NBA last season when he was a starter. He provided nothing offensively. He was poor defensively. He was washed up 3 years ago. He shouldn't be back. The other one is Damian Rudej, who's got a team option for $1 million. It's cheap, but was Rudej anything? He was nothing. He was really poor this season. Unlikely they bring him back. Thibodeau, I think, will want to bring his... have maximum flexibility to bring guys in that he wants to bring in rather than picking up a team option on Damian Rudej, who is not going to change the world, I wouldn't have thought. So no free agents happening for this team. They still do have Nikola Pekovic's contract on the books for another 2 seasons, at least with the cap spike, the $12 million that he's paid, which is the second most on this team, everybody. It won't seem as bad as what it has in previous seasons. So free agents, not too much to worry about for this team moving forward. Let's get into the team now itself, and there is a lot to dissect with this squad. We'll start off with, of course, Karl-Anthony Towns, the unanimous Rookie of the Year and one of the best rookies and fantasy prospects we've seen enter the game in the last decade. His season was tremendous, and a lot of people, and someone asked me specifically today, David Hopkins, if I was going to have a moment discussing Karl-Anthony Towns. I probably will, so you might want to set aside the next 10 minutes unless you're really keen on hearing me effuse praise on someone, because Towns was an absolutely magnificent specimen of a player. We saw special things from him in Summer League. I saw them in person. I went, shit, this guy is going to bring it. He couldn't hit a three-pointer in there at all, but everything he was doing, and some of the things we didn't even see displayed during the season, his passing ability was top-notch, his rebounding, his defense, and his defense has actually got a fair way to come as well, and Thibodeau is going to bring that out. Karl-Anthony Towns is going to be a top three player in fantasy within the next two seasons. I think that's, let's say top five. He's going to be a top five player in fantasy within the next three seasons. He is a top five dynasty startup selection right now. Some people will even pick him number one, and I really, it's hard to make an argument against that. He'll be a top 10 NBA player. He'll be a top 10 fantasy player almost definitely next year. He'll be a first round pick. He ended this year, his rookie campaign, 12th in 9-cat leagues, 17th in 8-cat leagues, which is obviously super impressive, and 18th in an 8-2 punting situation. We haven't seen this sort of performance from players for quite a while. He played 32 minutes, which is something that rookie centers don't do. They don't play 30 minutes. Towns was the exception. It took a while. It took a few months, and that's to be expected, and I couldn't kill Mitchell for that, really. But he started playing big minutes down the stretch and averaged 18.3 points, 10.4 rebounds. He was almost at half a three a game, and you just know that's going to get up to a three a game over the next 3 to 4 years. Two assists, that can also go to 3.5 to 4, especially with Thibodeau around, and we know that he has experience with a passing center like Joakim Noah. 0.7 steals, 1.7 blocks, that'll eclipse two as well. 54% from the field, 81% from three, from the free throw line. 81 from three would be a tremendous amount. 81 from the free throw line and 34% from three. Those are just ridiculously good numbers. He led the team in win shares at 8.3, in win shares per 48, in box score plus minus, in VORP, in PER. And he's got room to improve on so many of these areas. He had a true shooting percentage of 59%. He'll likely cut his turnovers down. He'll increase his assist rate. His usage was second on the team behind Andrew Wiggins at 24.8. That could go up to 26, 27 as he starts refining his offensive game. The sky is absolutely... You can say the sky is a limit for players. The sky is legitimately the limit for him. And by the sky, I mean the number one fantasy ranking, because that he will be a number one fantasy player at some point throughout his career, unless something tragic befalls him in terms of injury. He is that good. You can see what he did as a rookie, and no one really does that as a rookie. But you can also see the areas where he'll improve. Yes, he'll hit more threes. He'll be a 20-point scorer. He'll be a 3.5 assist guy. He'll block two shots a game. He will do so much more. And you know, he's not going to shoot worse from the free throw line. He's not going to drop his field goal percentage and start being a 45% shooter. He's going to be a 50-50 plus guy for his career. There is so much potential with Karl-Anthony Towns. He is a legitimate chance to be a positive contributor in 9 categories, and that equals the number one player in fantasy. So his ceiling is tremendous. If you try to acquire him in a dynasty league, you will not be able to do it. And if you can do it, then the person that you're trading with doesn't know what they're doing. You need to, if there's any possibility of getting Karl-Anthony Towns, you need to do it. He will be the number one player at some point. He will be a top five player in the next couple of seasons. By the time his rookie contract's done, he could very easily be the number one player in fantasy. I cannot say enough good things about Karl-Anthony Towns, so I'll stop there. Just know that he has the ability to get much, much better than what he is, and he's already a first round player. As for next season, where do you draft him? I think picking him in the top three is not ideal. I think picking him in the top five is probably not the best way to go, but he will go in the first round, there is no doubt. And if you've got a pick sitting between 8 and 12, you definitely have to consider him in that range. 8 might be pushing it, and I might be a little bit hesitant to do it, but in terms of, if you're a person who likes upside in the first round, and I'm not normally that person, I want more consistency, not that I think that Towns has got any consistency issues. If you want upside and you're picking at 8, he can go from 8 to 3 pretty comfortably, where some of the other guys in that range, maybe a Chris Paul, John Wall, they won't necessarily go that high. But you know, Towns or LeBron next year, you would almost have to lean Towns at this point. Towns or Chris Paul, you could easily lean Towns. And then we'll talk about this a little bit later with some of the listener questions. But he has got tremendous upside. He has got very visible areas to improve, and he is going to be an absolute animal in this league. And that's enough, because I'm getting a little overexcited talking about Karl-Anthony Towns. Let's go on to my second boyfriend on this team, Rick Rubio, the Ravishing One. He is hated by a lot of people. He is disrespected by a lot of people. Rubio's shoot, can't shoot. Fair enough. He's not a good shooter, I'll give you that, but that does not equal shit. He is a tremendously good player. He is one of the best defensive point guards in the game, and now with Tom Thibodeau joining in, if he is not the top two defensive point guard in the game, I will be stunned. He is tremendous at that sort of thing. In terms of his shooting, yes, he's never shot 40% from the field in an NBA season. The last 3 months of this season, though, he shot 41% from the field. He shot 38% from three, and he's a great free throw shooter. He can get to 40-41%. We saw Kemba Walker take a massive leap this year. I think coaching, I think some better players around him, I think the development of the players around him will enable Rick Rubio to jump from a 37.5% shooter, which he was this year, up to a 40, maybe a 41 next year, which is still not great, but it's not horrific. It's not horrible, and he can do a lot. He averaged this season. He played 76 games, which for everyone saying Rubio's injury prone, I railed against this in the preseason because I hate the term injury prone. I feel it's lazy in a lot of times and it's used incorrectly. You know what? Yes, he missed a lot of games. He tore his ACL. Cool. And then he had a really serious ankle sprain. Cool. Two injuries, unrelated, not re-injured. And that's called luck. That's not an injury-prone thing, and I wasn't worried about that happening. He missed six games this year. He played 31 minutes a game. He averaged 10, 4.5, and 8.5, two steals, 0.8 triples on 37 and 85 over the course of the season. That's really good. In terms of rankings, he was 47th in nine-cat leagues, and that's it, taking into consideration his percentages. 36th in eight-cat leagues. No, sorry, that's not right. Where did I get that number from? 35th in eight-cat leagues. That's close. And in a punt situation, an 8-2 league, you're talking 30th. And you could have drafted him in the 60s and 70s, and I got him in plenty of leagues. His field goal percentage, and this is a question that's going to come up later in the show, I'll answer it now. Yes, it's bad, but its standards, its Z-score was negative 1.3. That is not a must-punt situation. That can be recovered from. It can be. You combine Towns and Rubio on your team, and you're at 0.7 positive. And you're done. You've covered him. The guys that are absolutely must-punt guys, DeAndre Jordan, Dwight Howard, that sort of player, you can't recover from them, depending on who you draft. You need one big field goal percentage guy, and you've covered off Rubio. Now, most of the time that I drafted him, it was in a situation where I had, you know, I was punting field goal percentage, because that's probably my most common punt, and it was last season. So I didn't care how he shot, but he is not non-recoverable from in terms of his field goal percentage because he doesn't take that many attempts. He took 7.7 attempts from the field last year, and that's one of the key things when looking at percentages. If he shot it 15 times a game, Kobe Bryant style, which he shot more than 15, and shot 37%, it's an issue. But at seven attempts a game at 37, and as I said, 41% over the last 3 months, it wasn't a concern really with Rubio. So yes, he's better off in a punt situation, but he's not a complete must avoid in roto leagues anymore, I don't think. You see by these rankings where he's a top 40 guy in a roto sort of format, it can easily be covered off and you can easily deal with it. And Rubio, there'll be lots of Timberwolves people or people who aren't knowledgeable about the Timberwolves. They need to trade him, get rid of him, give Zach LaVine the ball. It's terrible. It's a bad idea. I don't think that they should be getting Chris... No, that's not true. They could draft Chris Dunn, but I don't think they should be drafting Chris Dunn with the thought of let's trade Rubio away now. And I know that previous management has thought that. Let's hope that Thibodeau doesn't think that. And I don't think he will because he is going to tremendously value the defense that Rubio brings, which is really one of his big traits that most people don't get. He is a tremendous, tremendous defender. He finished fourth on this team in defensive box score plus minus. He finished third in defensive win shares at 2.2. In terms of his overall win shares, he was third on the team. His box score plus minus, he was third on the team. He is a key part of this team. He is one of the best point guards in the league at passing. He's one of the best defensive point guards in the league. And if he just develops a semi-consistent shot, he is going to be a tremendous fantasy player. So you know I love Rick Rubio, and I know plenty of you will hate Rick Rubio, but to me, he is a guy that I get outside the top 50 nearly every year, and didn't work out so well for me in 2014-15 because he missed so many games, but absolutely loved having him this year, and he fits exactly what I want to do with my fantasy teams most of the time. So Rubio, another guy that I do really like, and he's going to benefit tremendously from Thibodeau's coaching. Has gone to another one of my boyfriends, Gorgui Dieng. I hated the way that he was used to start the season. He was completely misused by Sam Mitchell. He played only as the backup center behind Karl Anthony Towns, which is just not what he's available to do. Yes, he's probably a natural center, but he can play the four. He is a decent shooter. He can add a three-point game. Playing some of these other scrubs like Garnett, which is, yes, that's what he is at this point. He's a scrub, Kevin Garnett. Defensively, he's pretty good, but he just can't stay on the court enough. He provides nothing offensively. Playing Nemanja Bjelica there, who had a real lucky hot streak to start the season. Playing Nikola Pekovic there was the biggest crime against basketball this NBA season saw. but eventually we went to Jeng. Now, Jeng was drafted relatively early, hoping that he would be able to play 28 minutes a night and be productive, and he was shit for the first couple of months, really terrible. And it says a lot that then he ended the season as the 53rd ranked player in 9 cat leagues. He ended the season as the 60th ranked player in 8 cat leagues. He was 59th in a punting scenario. Look, really, really good numbers. And you look at his pre and post All-Star splits, 68 and 30. Like, that's a big difference when he was actually given the playing time that he deserved. And if you look at his advanced statistics, they're tremendous. He was second on the team in box score plus minus. He was second on the team in win shares. He was second on the team in VORP. And in PER, he was third on the team. So he was a tremendous part of this team. Now, is he the power forward of the future for this squad? Probably not. He is the power forward of an 8 seed. He's probably not the power forward on this team if they're going to be conference finalists. But he'd be a great backup big man to play 25 minutes off the bench, be a good rebounder, a solid defender, be a guy that can hit some shots. He can do it all on both ends of the court, and I do really like what Jeng can do. He played all 82 games, one of 4 Timberwolves players to do that, at 27 minutes only. 10 and 7. He had 1.1 steals, 1.2 blocks, and 53 and 83. So tremendous percentages. A great roto player. He did hit 0.1 threes a game at only 30%, but I think that that's definitely got room to improve, and he can become a decent 0.5 threes per game guy. He's good defensively. He's a really decent rebounder. Just going to be interesting to see the way that Thibodeau uses him, because they could. Now, they probably won't bring in a power forward at pick 5. I'm just not sure who's going to be around at that time. Henry Ellison, probably not. Jeng is an upgrade over him at that point. He is an interesting target for Dynasty Leagues to me, Jeng, because what do we know? We don't know much. That's the problem. Yes, he's in a great spot for the next 1 or 2 years, I reckon. But after that, he might start to lose some of his usefulness. So while I do love him, and while I do think that he is a really good player, I am a little bit concerned of what happens to him moving forward, what happens to him under this new regime. And I am just a little bit cautious. I wouldn't be aggressively buying Gorgui Jeng after seeing, yeah, that he had a top 55 finish or top 55 season, you know, ranked 30th post All-Star, and thinking, yep, we're talking a guaranteed top 40 guy next year. I think he'll be a guy that you have to draft outside the top 50. I don't think taking him inside the top 50 is going to be a very smart move next year. But there's always the chance that he plays, him and Towns go out there and play 36 minutes apiece next to each other and put up just bonkers numbers. And that could definitely happen, because we know what Thibodeau likes to do with minutes. Whether he's learned any lessons from that, we don't know at this point, but it is something that could happen. Andrew Wiggins. Fair to say this guy isn't my boyfriend. I'm not a massive, massive fan of Wiggins, but as I said, I do like to give credit where it's due, and Wiggins was tremendous to end the season. He started the season poor. He was almost unownable in leagues. Now, you had to own him because he was giving you 20 points per game, but he was a negative contributor in every other category. But he turned it around. His 9-cat pre-All-Star split, 156th. Post, 76th. 8-cat, 101 and 52. You know, overall, his season numbers aren't great, 115th and 86th. These aren't great numbers. But when you look at the splits and look what he was able to do coming down the stretch drive of the season, he put up some pretty impressive numbers. He ended the year, he's second in the league, playing 81 games at 35 minutes, 20.5 points, 0.7 threes, 3.6 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal, 0.6 blocks, 46 and 76. I was a guy that was not massively high on him heading into next season. I drafted him absolutely nowhere, and that decision probably paid benefits to me. But I do think that his third season is going to be a big, big breakout for him. He really started to hit those threes at a better rate. He was at 30% on the season. The last 3 months, he hit them at 39%. His field goal percentage for the year was 46. He hit them over the last 3 months at 49%. He got his free throws up from 76 to 79 as well. He started hitting more of those threes. He got his defense up. He increased his steal rate over last season. He started blocking some shots. And he's a guy that, you know, it's a half a block guy at a shooting guard over a steal a game, but he's always going to have a deficiency in his rebounding and his assist numbers. Now, he did increase his assist to 2.4 over the last 3 months, when he only averaged 2 for the season, but he's never going to be a guy, I think, that's a 3-4 assist sort of game guy, and his rebounding is going to struggle, and that's going to keep him down, and it probably keeps him out of the top 20 moving forward. I think that he will continue to be slightly overrated in fantasy, and I think that you will have to take him inside the top 50 next year, whereas I think top 50, you know, 45 is probably the area where he ends up, but you're going to have to take him well in there, and there's going to be no value built into that sort of pick. In a dynasty format, he's showing me enough where he could become a top 30 player in say two or three seasons time. But again, I just feel like the buying price on him is way too high with the way that people view Wiggins, and I'm not a huge fan of him. If you look at his advanced numbers, he was fourth on the team in win shares, so obviously a big contributor there. But in terms of win shares per 48, he's down right down at eighth because he played a lot of minutes and he just is not quite as productive as you want him to be. Box score plus minus, he was actually a negative 2.1 and ended up behind Kevin Garnett in that metric. And his PER was just above average at 16.5. He does have a lot of room to grow. He's still very young, obviously. But he's a guy that I do urge just some caution on, because I think the acquisition price of getting Andrew Wiggins in a dynasty format at this point is still probably too high. You could have acquired him in January at a reasonable cost, but the way that he finished the season, I think a lot of people will be thinking top 20 next year. And to me, that feels like it's way out of reach. I think that he's probably inside the top 50, but marginally. Because unlike Towns, I can see the areas where Towns improves. I can see Towns getting the threes, the assists, getting the blocks up there, getting to 20 points. Wiggins, how high does he go in terms of scoring? Does he start getting rebounds? I'm not so sure. Does he start, now does he get 1.5 steals a game? That's an area where I can definitely see. Does he start passing? Not so sure about that. Can he hit 1.2 threes a game? Again, not so sure about that. So I don't really see as big a pathway for him to improve as what I do with Towns at this point. But again, he's still young. He's heading into his third season. So, you know, getting him in or owning him in a dynasty league is still really valuable. But is it as valuable as Towns? No. Zach LaVine. Really bad start to the season. At the start of the year, and this was a real odd decision from Sam Mitchell. All right, LaVine is going to be our starting two guard. Fantastic. Awesome. Let's get him locked and loaded for our fantasy leagues. And then he had a preseason where he was dreadful. And when he was named as the starting shooting guard, we didn't know what that meant. And that was something that I did preach caution with in the preseason. Okay, he's going to start. Is he going to be a starter that plays 12 minutes, Noah Vonleh style? Is he going to start and play 35 minutes? Well, it turned out he didn't even end up. He was named the starter before preseason and taken out of being a starter before preseason ended. So that was terrible from Mitchell, in my opinion, anyway. And they started running LaVine as the backup point guard, in which he's really bad in that role. He's just not good in that role. We saw that when Rubio went down last season, when he was forced to be the point guard, he put up stats by brute force. And that can happen with players who aren't good, who get extended minutes because nobody else is out there playing those minutes, that they just accumulate numbers because they have to. And that was the case with LaVine to end last season. So there was a lot of hope with him heading into the year, but he was unownable for big stretches of the season. But like an Andrew Wiggins, we look at his pre and post All-Star splits, 188 in 9-cat leagues, 69 post All-Star. It's a big jump. 8-cat, 155 and 68. These are big, big jumps because he started playing at the two-guard position and he started hitting his shots at a ridiculous rate. He started spotting up. He started going, you know what? I've got Ricky Rubio here who can create space for me. I've got Andrew Wiggins as a driver who can create space. I've got Karl Anthony Towns who can create space. And he hit his threes at 44% over the last 3 months of the year. He hit 2.4 a game in his 16 points in 35 minutes. Over those last 3 months. Now, for the season, he was at 14-3-3 at 1.5 threes and 0.8 steals, 45-79. Decent numbers. But those last 3 months, 16.5, 2.5, 3, 1.2 steals, 2.4 triples, 47-77, and 44 is his percentage splits. Tremendous numbers that, you know, put him on the verge of the top 50. Now, I touched on this a little bit earlier. What's Thibodeau going to think of Zach LaVine? That's the concern, because his defense, it leaves quite a bit to be desired. In defensive box score plus minus, he was 10th on this team. Defensive win shares, he was 5th, so not too bad in that sense. But offensively, his game is a lot more advanced than what he is defensively. So he's got a fair way to go. Overall, as a box score plus minus guy, he was a negative 1.4. In large part, or in total part, because of his defense. He was a below average PER guy. So the advanced numbers did not love him. He has got room to improve, but he could be, this is where the issue with LaVine lies. Thibodeau could come in and teach him defense, and his defense could improve, and Thibodeau will love him, and he'll play 32 minutes, and he'll start getting 1.5 steals, because we know the sort of athleticism that he's got. But what if he comes in and just doesn't concentrate? He doesn't concentrate on his defense. And Thibodeau just goes, well, you know what, mate? you're not playing. I'll play Jamal Murray. I'll play Buddy Hield. I'll play a free agent that I signed at shooting guard, and you can go back and play 20 minutes off the bench, and you can be happy or you can piss off. And there's a big possibility that that happens. So it could go one of two ways. With the growth that LaVine has shown throughout his career, and he was a guy that I was not interested in really heading into his first season. I just thought, I'm not convinced on this guy at all. I've turned out to be a bit wrong on that. I wasn't convinced, but he's shown growth. Hey, look at me. I can hit threes now, and I'm doing it at a tremendous rate. Good, you've worked on that. Your ball handling, your assists, yeah, they were pretty decent in that first season. Your dribbling needs a bit of work. Your decision-making needs some work. Your defense needs some work. But I do have some confidence that he can actually start to do that, start to make that those decisions correct, start to do that work that he needs to do, and become a pretty decent fantasy player. But there's more risk associated with LaVine in terms of how he meshes with Thibodeau and how Thibodeau sees his coachability and his defense. If I'm betting on it, I'm betting on LaVine taking a step forward and becoming a really consistent top 100 player, probably a top 75 player. But again, with the way that he finished last season, the red hot form he showed down the stretch, buying prices in Dynasty are going to be pretty low. I might wait for the first couple of months of the season, maybe the first month. Maybe there's an adjustment period with LaVine out under Thibodeau and he looks poor and he gets benched. And then I might go in and start lowballing his offer or his owner with an offer and try and acquire him then. But he does have concerns, but he does have ability. So we know that he has ability. In that way that he finished the season, 16 points, 2.5 threes on 44% shooting with 3 assists and 1.2 steals. They're really good. They're awesome. They're fifth round, sixth round type of value numbers. And the turnovers aren't very high because he's not handling the ball all that much. And that's the way it should remain with LaVine. Again, if I'm betting on it, I'm betting on him turning in a much improved season, probably a top 75 season next year. But there is that risk that Thibodeau just has a real issue and says, you're not playing defense. You're getting shipped out. I'm bringing someone else in. And that is a concern with LaVine. So just bear that in mind when you're thinking about him. Nemanja Bjelica, a player whose name that I did really struggle with in terms of pronunciation to start the season. I had some help from some Baltic friends of mine who gave me some nice pronunciation guides. And now I think I've got it pretty much down pat. Nemanja Bjelica. It's probably the most fun name in the NBA to say. That might change at some point in the next couple of years, but it is a pretty exciting name to say. Bjelica started the season red hot, and apparently, according to some people, he was a must-own player. I never thought he was a must-own player, and must-own is always a very debatable tag for players because what does it mean? I must own him, or someone must own him in your league. Someone's got to get their hands on him. It really depended always on who you were dropping, but he was playing the season just shooting at like 60% and 50% from three, shit that was just not going to remain tenable. It just wasn't going to continue. And we saw a drop off and he fell completely out of the rotation. But to end the season, he ended up actually playing over Gorgui Dieng, down, not starting, but playing minutes ahead of Dieng down the stretch and looked really comfortable. He ended up in his rookie season playing 60 games at 18 minutes, 5 points only, but 0.8 triples, 3.5 rebounds, half a steal, half a block, 47 and 73%, including 38% on his three-pointers. What does this mean for Bjelica? Well, he closed his post all-star at 152 in 8-cat leagues, 9-cat leagues, 173 in 8-cat leagues, you know, pretty decent numbers. I think that he has to be the first big off the bench next season, assuming they don't upgrade that forward position. They go with a Dieng Towns starting combo. Then Bjelica comes in. He can replace Dieng, and then he can play with Dieng as a center. He can play with Karl Anthony Towns. Obviously, Garnett's still around. He's going to get his token 8 minutes. Maybe we don't know exactly what he's going to do, assuming he's back. He's still paid $8 million for next season, which is just... I understand what Kevin Garnett means to this team, but you're paying $8 million to a guy who's a cheerleader slash coach at this point and still demands ceremonial starting roles, which really can muck up a rotation. Unsure of how Thibodeau's going to deal with it. Maybe he'll just be a hard ass and say, sorry, Kev, you're sitting on the bench, mate. You're not starting. You're not playing games a lot of this time. We don't know how that's going to roll out. But Bjelica, once Garnett was shut down with that knee injury, once Pekovic was shut down with that knee injury, he started to look a lot better. In terms of his advanced numbers, he was fourth on the team in box score plus minus. That was pretty impressive. Not a big negative defensively as well, which I thought would be a concern from him. And he finished seventh on the team in win shares, which in his rookie season, not a bad effort from Nemanja Bjelica. He's got a lot to work on, obviously. But in only 18 minutes, he can get 24 minutes, I think, next year, 23 minutes. Again, it all depends on what happens. But I think his upside's there. But to me, his upside is there to be ranked 130-ish. That's his upside. But does that mean you want to draft him? Because you're not going to draft a guy at pick 150 and go, I hope you can get to rank 130. That's not the point of those last draft picks. The last draft picks are go, this guy's at 150, he can become player 100. He can become player 90. Not 150 to 130. If your guy's upside is 12th round, there's not much point in it. He'll be in and out of rosters. He'll be one of those, I'm going to add Bjelica because the Wolves are playing. There's not many teams playing. Oh, he's on a little hot streak and he's giving me 8 rebounds and a 3 a game because someone's injured. Sure. But as for his overall upside, I'm not massively interested in it for next season. For Dynasty Leagues, again, we need to remember that he's not young. He's been around. He's 27 years old. He should still have an improvement next year, again, because it's his second year in the NBA. He came across with a great pedigree from Europe as well. European MVP last season with some big numbers. And I do think that he can put up some pretty decent stats moving forward. But in terms of his overall dynasty value, not really sure it ever approaches top 75. It might get to top 100, but I'd be pretty doubtful of that at this point. Although I think he's going to have a significant role for this team and he's going to be a great actual on-court player. And it doesn't necessarily translate to fantasy numbers. Speaking of not translating to fantasy numbers, Shabazz Muhammad took a huge, huge step back last season. He went from 181 the season before in terms of 9-cat rank to 287. He is extraordinarily one-dimensional. He scores. And that is it. He played 21 minutes a game in all 82 games, 10.5 points, 3.3 rebounds, half a three, 0.6 assists, 0.3 steals, 0.1 blocks at 47 and 76. He goes through stretches where he'll go and put up a 30-point performance as he did in that game against the Warriors. A huge night from Shabazz Muhammad there. He'll go out there and grab 5 offensive boards on one game. You'll go, shit, what, Muhammad? He's putting up some big numbers. But I'm not convinced that he is any sort of future as a starter. He was last on this team in defensive box score plus minus, behind such defensive luminaries as Kevin Martin and Damian Rudej. That's poor. He was 10th in overall box score plus minus. His win shares were okay because he played 82 games, so that helps him there. But if you look at win shares per 48, he was down at 7th. He was only 0.2 in the defensive win shares column. He's an average player. He's a decent backup scorer off a bench unit that can play some small ball 4. He can play the 3 and he can score. He can get you buckets. That's what Shabazz Muhammad does. But does he do anything else? Not really. And I really think that Thibodeau is going to have an issue with Muhammad with his defensive lack of skills and lack of effort. And the fact that he doesn't move the ball, he doesn't pass the ball, he doesn't provide anything else apart from the ability to score. Not even to stretch the floor, to score on the block, in the post, mid-range. That's really what Muhammad does, and it's not conducive to great play moving forward. Not sure he'll ever be an NBA starter, and wouldn't be shocked if by the end of the season he doesn't play for this team anymore. I'm not a fan of Shabazz Muhammad. I don't think his fantasy game is that great. I think his ceiling is probably top 150, if he can get to that, which I still think is a bit of a concern. And just not really loving what Muhammad can do. Yes, he's still only young, although no one seems to actually know his age. He hasn't been in the NBA long, but he took a big step back last season, and I think Thibodeau is going to take no shit from him in terms of his defense, and that could be a real issue with what he's able to do moving forward. Now we're on to Kevin Garnett, who actually finished the season as the 121st player in per 36 value. He finished 243rd in 9-cat leagues, which is pretty good for a guy that barely played. He only played 15 minutes a game in 38 games, averaged 3.2 points, 4 rebounds, 1.6 assists, 0.7 steals, 0.3 blocks on 47 and 67. But Garnett is cooked. He's not playing 15 minutes a game next season. if he plays at all, which we assume he will, but he won't play that. He's more likely to be single digits in terms of his minutes. Obviously, his arrow is firmly pointing down, although it can't get too much worse than last season. You can own Garnett in a league that has 400 players owned. That's probably about it to me, because you can't rely upon him to play enough games. And yes, even when he plays, he puts up numbers that are inside the top 300, but he's not going to play enough games for you to really own him in any sort of situation. He's been a legend of the game. We know that. He is slowly ticking down. In terms of what he did last season, though, advanced numbers, fourth on his team in win shares per 48. He was fourth on the team in defensive win shares despite playing just the 38 games. His box score plus minus, he was fifth on the team. He led the team in defensive box score plus minus. He still did a lot defensively, but he can't play enough minutes for it to really make a difference. And that's really the story with Kevin Garnett at this point. So all you KG fans, just he's not going out like Kobe. He's not going out hijacking a team and destroying the ability of that team to mold their youngsters or form a cohesive core. He'll go out and he'll do his best work behind the scenes. He'll do his best work in practice. He'll do his best work in the locker room and sitting on the bench, not out there destroying minutes or playing time or opportunities for other guys. Tyus Jones was one of many of the first round point guards drafted last season that I did really like, and he showed some glimpses to end last season. His numbers overall aren't great, 328 and 324 for 9 and 8 cat leagues, but cracked himself inside the top 300 after the All-Star break. And while that doesn't sound like much, it's a start, because Once the Timberwolves got rid of another 40-year-old, Andre Miller, they moved Zach LaVine completely away from point guard, Jones was the backup point guard. So he started to look a bit better and played some games where, honestly, he played better than Rubio. Maybe only two or three games, but it did happen. He played 37 games for the season after playing a lot in the D-League to start. He ended with 16 minutes a game, 4 points, half a 3, 3 assists, 0.8 steals, 36 and 72. As is the case with most rookies, their field goal percentage takes a big spike in year two, so you could expect him to jump anywhere between 2 to 8%, I would say, in his field goal percentage. A 10% jump is also not crazy, although that would put him at 46 and make him a super efficient point guard. I think a 41 or 42 season is not crazy. 72 to 75 from the free throw line is also not crazy. Threes from 30 to 34, also not crazy. He should play more than the 15 minutes a game that he saw last season, unless Thibodeau decided he wants to go in a different direction at backup point guard, which is always a possibility. But he ended the season the last 2 months playing 19 minutes a game, averaging 4 assists, 1.5 steals, 4.3 points. Yes, he shot only 11% from three in those last 2 months, and that is a concern. That has to change. But I liked what I saw from Tyus Jones. It depends on what they want to do with the point guard spot. If they move Rubio, and if Rubio in a couple of years, that's when I think that Jones can really become a starting point guard. When Rubio might be 28 or 29, and Rubio is much younger than you anticipate as well. He's only 25. So in 3 years' time, he's 28. Maybe you're moving, but Rubio's still got 5 years left, really, at prime level, maybe 4 years left. Jones is a guy that can take over. He's still only 19. He does have a lot of room to grow, but I do think that he's a decent play. He actually finished defensively box score plus minus ahead of Zach LaVine, so he's got a little bit defensively. He was overall box score plus minus ahead of a guy like Shabazz Muhammad. He finished ninth on the team in that metric. In his win shares per 48, it wasn't that great. He finished 12th. He was okay, but I think that there's a lot to build on for him moving forward, and I do really like what Tyus Jones can bring. And we saw, in a couple of those games to end the season, some real flashes of what he can do passing-wise, and he just needs to get that shot to happen, which, again, it might not happen. He might not become a 34% or 36% three-point shooter, but I think that he can be a 40-plus field goal guy. I think that he can be a field goal percentage guy next year, and I think that 3-point percentage, I think he can get his free throws up. I think the assists, we already know, are there. Playing 20 minutes a night, he might get you 4 assists a game, which, to be honest, in a standard league, streaming him in at the last day of a matchup and getting 4 assists, there's not many guys out there that average 4 assists. If you have a guy that averages 4 assists, if your team averages 4 assists in a fantasy league, you win assists most weeks. 3.5 assists is normally the average, per game, per player is an average sort of target. You average 4 assists, you're in business. And if he goes up from 15 to 20 minutes a game, he could be at 4 assists a game next season, which is pretty bloody handy to me. So he is someone that I do think that it's a slow burn, it's a long-term investment, and he's not going to be a standard league guy next year. He won't be a standard league guy the year after unless Rubio happens to go. But he has got a big chance to put up a big season as the backup point guard and really start to show his wares and maybe then capitalize on a Rubio trade and take over the starting job there. Not that I encourage a Rubio trade because I do like Rubio, but Jones can be a guy who jumps forward and has got a lot of ability. The next couple of players on my list, there's going to be a lot of negativity. So if you don't like negativity, don't listen. Tayshaun Prince was the 360th ranked player last season. He was ranked 421st in per 36 value in 8-cat leagues. He was 375th in 8-cat leagues. So those are them to 9-cat. 375th in 8-cat leagues. He was objectively and subjectively terrible. He played 19 minutes a game in 77 games. Too much for me. He averaged 2.9 points, which actually on reflection probably seems like more than it's more than what I anticipated it to be. 1.9 rebounds, 0.9 assists, 0.5 steals, 45 and 68 on 17% from three. He was poor. He's 36 years old. He's an unrestricted free agent. He should not be playing in the NBA next season. So there is zero reason to have any shares of Tayshaun Prince in any fantasy league. He finished 13th on this team in win shares per 48. His offensive box score plus minus was negative 2.9. Horrible. And one of the other guys I'm about to talk about next, he was behind them. His defensive box score plus minus was okay, negative 0.2, but it still was a negative. He was not a good player by any sort of metric that you can use. He just soaked up minutes that should have gone to Jeng, that should have gone to Muhammad, that should have gone to Levine, and he will be out of this team. He was putrid. He had a PER of 6.3, which is disgustingly bad. Tayshaun Prince, Pistons fans love you. You got them a championship, but you were washed up 3 years ago. Goodbye. Adrian Payne. The Timberwolves traded a first-round pick to get this guy. Yes, it's protected, but Jesus Christ. This guy shouldn't be worth a fifth-round pick. He is really, really poor, and he was another name that I forgot to mention at the start of the show that was playing minutes over Gorgui Dieng. Sam Mitchell, this is why you got fired. That and the fact that you wear suits that are three times too big for you. Adrian Payne should not have been playing. He was the 415th ranked player this year in 9-cat leagues, 405 in 8-cat leagues. And you know what? I thought he had a little bit of something to him when he came across from Atlanta to Minnesota last year, which was a baffling trade, but he actually showed a few flashes. Yeah, I was probably wrong. He's really bad. He averaged 2.5 points this year, 2.2 rebounds. He hit his threes at 28%, and that was one of his things. Yeah, he's supposed to be a stretch. Yeah, he's not. He shot 37% from the field as a power forward. Dreadful. 65% from the free throw line. He looks like he's 35 years old. He's actually 24 as a second round player. He finished last on this team in win shares, last on this team in win shares per 48. Second last on this team in box score plus minus. He was worst on this team in offensive box score plus minus. He had a PER of 5.6, worse than Tayshaun Prince, the second worst on this team. He is disgraceful at this point. He has still got a couple of seasons left because of the rookie scale contract. But the Timberwolves have got an option to pick him up for his fourth. They shouldn't. They should not pick up that option. It's $3.1 million for 2017-18. They should not pick up that option. Adrian Payne is done. Cut your losses. He is really bad. I could eat my words, but I'm almost 100% confident that I will not and that he is really bad. Do not get excited about Adrian Payne. If you own him in a dynasty league, maybe someone gets excited and takes him off you. If they do, they're wrong, but it could happen. Greg Smith signed at the end of the season and played some decent minutes as a backup center on this team. He was 394th in 9-cat leagues post-All-Star, 397th in 8-cat leagues. Didn't really do a huge amount. He is an unrestricted free agent and probably won't be back. 11 minutes per game in 18 games, 2.5 rebounds, 2.5 points. Doesn't block shots, but did shoot 56% from the field and 41% from the line. Not much to like about Greg Smith. He's had some decent games in Houston a couple of years back. He's 25 years old. He might catch on somewhere as a 10-day contract guy next March or April. But if you're owning on him in a dynasty league and hanging your hopes on Greg Smith, you shouldn't be. Nick Pekovic. He's a guy that I hated as a fantasy player even when he was healthy, because he offered you points, he offered you rebounds, he offered you decent field goal percentage, decent free throw percentage. He could not get a block to save his life. He could not get a steal. He didn't hit threes. He didn't pass. I think he had combined less than 2 assists, steals, and blocks through basically every season of his career. Now, he came back from an Achilles injury and ankle problem this year and played 12 games at 13 minutes, 4.5 points, which is a good return on points, 1.8 boards, but his field goal percentage has suffered tremendously the last couple of years, down at 38% this year. Did not block a shot, had 0.9 assists and 0.1 steals. He was a guy that, he was a threat to be a 20 and 10 guy, maybe. You're looking at him and go, Jesus, this guy's a monster. Look how big he is. He's putting up numbers. He's hard to defend, all that sort of stuff. He had 2 seasons in 2012-13 and 13-14 where he was 16 and 9 and 17.5 and 8.7. But in those seasons, he didn't crack 1 for assists, steals, or blocks. So he never got to 1 as an average. His field goal percentage went from 56, 52, 54 to the last seasons, 2 seasons now, to 42 and 38. And that's a real concern, that he's dropping so far off in those sort of categories. Now, there is talk of Pekovic. Yes, he came back and he struggled, but that was to be expected. And when they shut him down, it wasn't because there was a flare-up of the injury. He just was a bit sore. And again, that was to be expected. So he could come back and he could very easily be the backup center on this team. It's fair to say, though, that he is not going to be the starting center on this team. They've got Karl-Anthony Towns. It's not happening. But as a backup center playing 15 minutes a night and being a real scorer off the bench, he offers something. And what that offer is if you play in a deep dynasty league and you need someone who can chime in with 12 points, who can average, say, 9 points in 12 minutes a game, which he can do, and that, as dumb as it sounds, in a deep league, that can be useful. Pekovic will come back, and I think, and all the reports I've read, is that he should be, you know, relatively injury-free for next season. And heading in and actually being able to play preseason, get into training camp, and get some decent minutes. Now, I don't believe he's a good player at this point, but he's a lot better than Greg Smith. He's a lot better than Adrian Payne, and you have to be real deep. You have to be Red Rock Dynasty League deep, 400 players deep. But in that, I would be looking at grabbing him, because I'm pretty sure that he will be better than a ranked 400 player last year. He went from 148 in 14-15 to 442, and that's on a per-game basis. He's not going to be back to 148, but he should comfortably be inside the top 300, and he's got a real chance of being a top 250 player. As dumb as this sounds, and this is only for you deep league guys, Pekovic is going to be a guy that is completely off the radar, in my opinion, but will have a bounce back season next year. Don't expect too much, but I expect him to definitely improve on what we saw. Damian Rudej. He was bad yet again. He was in that baffling trade of Chase Budinger for Damian Rudej. Don't know why the Timberwolves did that. Rudej played 8 minutes in 33 games, 2.3 threes at point and 0.5 triples a game. 34%. Basically, he takes threes. That's what he does. He attempted 1.9 field goals per game. 1.5 of those were threes. He takes threes. That's what he does. And he doesn't do it at a great rate. So I am not thinking there's a lot to like about Damian Rudej. He was second worst. Let's get that number right. He was, in terms of box score plus minus, he was 13th on this team. In terms of win shares per 48, he was 14th on this team. Total win shares, he was 14th. He had a PER of 5.5, the worst on this team. He has that team option, and it almost definitely won't be picked up. Rudej offered something, but he will be back in Europe next year. So, yeah, any dynasty value of him, he is pretty much done and dusted. And given he's already 29 years old, I reckon that's probably the last we see of Damian Rudej. I'm going to take a quick break now, and then I'm going to be back to look at an overseas drafted stash player that the Timberwolves have got and to answer your questions. This is the part with just the guitar. While we wait on the bass and drums, I'll sing of love and you from afar. Well, here they come and now, me and the sky are on the road. As we hit the halftime break, the chorus lets you know you can't see. this Timberwolves season in review, and they do have an overseas drafted player, a stash player, who is mildly interesting to me. I don't really know what his place is going to be on this team. His name is, I'll try and get this right, Bojan Dubljević. Dubljević? Please correct me if I'm wrong. I think he's a Montenegrin. He's currently playing for Valencia in Spain. He was the 29th pick of the second round in 2013. He signed a two-year contract with Valencia in 2013, so that contract should be up. I couldn't find any information to see whether he's extended. He was thought to be about 2 years away when he was drafted. And what he is a top big man, a really big, he's not really big, he's 6 foot 10, he's a center, but he's a decent scorer as a center. And like a lot of Europeans, he hits threes. So what he did this season, he played in La Liga, he played for Valencia, he played in Euro Cup as well, and he had some decent performances. Overall, if we look at what he did through both La Liga and Euro Cup, he played 37 games, he averaged 12.9 points, 5.2 boards, 0.7 steals, 0.4 blocks. But what really stands out to me is the fact that he hit 42% of his threes on 2.4 attempts per game. He was 35 the year before, 47 the year before that, 45 the year before that, 41 the year before that, and 50 the year before that in limited minutes. So he is a three-point marksman as a center. Obviously, his rebounding numbers aren't massive, but remember, he's not playing many minutes. He's only playing 20 minutes a game here, so he's in sort of a low role. But 20 minutes a game, 13 points, 42% three-point shooter, he can have a role. And if Pekovic isn't fit, which all indications say that Pekovic will be, I could see Dubljević, I can see him coming over and playing that Adrian Payne, Greg Smith type of role as the backup center who plays 10 minutes. And if Pekovic can only play 8 minutes, he plays 18 minutes or 16 minutes and helps to stretch the floor with his team. So that's something that he can do. You have to be really, really balls deep in a dynasty to consider Dubljević as an option to grab, but it could happen. Again, a Red Rock Dynasty League's got 400 players in it, and if you've got rookie stash ability, he can come in and he can be a guy that is a top 350 player, is a top 300 player with his ability to hit threes. Like a 42% three-point shooter as a center is not common. And a big man who scores with the relative ease that he's been able to do, like averaging 13 points in 18 minutes is pretty bloody good going. And able to do that is an important thing. He'll get found out defensively, the rebounds, the shot blocking, that stuff won't work for him. But as a threat to hit threes, he's a guy to keep an eye on. So Bojan Dubljević, check him out if you're in that real deep dynasty. And I'm guessing not many players in your league will know that name. But keep an eye on him. Now, to your questions, I got inundated with Timberwolves questions. I'm not going to be able to go through all of them because I've got literally 8 pages worth of questions here on my sheet. Some of them are fantasy related, some of them not, and that's absolutely fine when we're talking about these questions. Midnight Walker on Twitter at KingMidnight60. How far do you think Minnesota can go in the first season under Thibs? 40 games? I think they can win 40 games. They went 29 this year. They can definitely win 40. Could they sneak into a playoff spot? They could challenge for the 8 seed. They probably won't. It's all going to hinge on, probably not Towns, to be honest, probably going to hinge on what step forward Wiggins can take in terms of his, can he sustain the three-point shooting? Can LaVine do that? Does LaVine buy in defensively? They really have to improve their defense. So Towns is going to have to step up. LaVine's going to have to step up. Thibodeau's going to bring his system in, so I think they can get to 40-plus wins. Joe Buck says, what roles do you see LaVine and Shabazz playing under Tibbs? What do you think Bielitz's ceiling is? Well, I've talked about LaVine and Shabazz. I think LaVine definitely starts and has a real chance of being a big 30-plus minute guy. Shabazz, I'm really, really concerned about. His other question is, what do you think of Bielitz's ceiling? I think his ceiling is probably a 24-minute-a-game guy, and it's not top 100 to me. Then a lot of users interacting and answering each other's questions, which is always great. Dean Vasich says, do you see Bielitsa being the first big off the bench next season? Absolutely. He had a strong finish to the season. He absolutely did. Where else do we go next? Super Buck Wild. How good can Rubio be with the young stars around him if he plays a full 82? He doesn't need to play full 82, Mr. Buck Wild. He played 76 today. That's a full season in my book. How good can he be? Well, he was a top 50 player this year comfortably. He was a top 48 cat guy. That is where he goes. He is a top 40 player in fantasy for next season in my book, unless something radical changes, that's where he is. Daniel Bradley asks a great question. What sort of pace do you envisage Tibbs playing or having the Timberwolves play at? That's a great question, because we're going from Sam Mitchell, who had the 20th pace in the NBA, which is not all that great, but we're going to Tibbs, who in his 4 years in Chicago ranked 28th, 27th, 29th, and 23rd. But Tibbs, I don't even know what to call him. He was also able to adapt to some degree. When he had a healthy Derrick Rose, his team was a lot more offensive than you might have remembered. When Rose went down, he was dealing without Rose, he relied more on slowing it down and playing defensively. So his offense, when he's got offensive talented players, he can actually do some things. So the pace won't be high. It won't be top half of the league. I think we're looking at bottom third, anywhere between 20 to 30, most likely in that 25 range. So he will slow down, but it's not like the Timberwolves were playing at a massively fast pace last season as that 20th team. They weren't great in that sort of aspect. So you can expect somewhat of a downgrade, but in terms of overall what it does, I think we're going to see more concentration of minutes into the better players, and that should make up the difference that we see with a drop in pace. We'll see Towns go from 32 to 34. Yeah, we'll see LaVine go from 28 to 32. We'll see Wiggins probably stay at 36. We'll move from 35 to 36. We'll see Jing maybe go from 28 to 32. All that stuff can happen. Good question though, Daniel. I do. That's the way you got to look at these things and try and really dig into it and see what you can find out. Next question, Rob Percher. He said, "I made a bet before Cat was drafted. I said the Wolves will win a championship before the Lakers win another. Thoughts?" I don't see either of them winning a championship soon, but I would probably agree with you that the Wolves have got a better chance at this point with all the super young talent that they've got at the moment. Mr. Malmanger at Twitter, at Mr. underscore Malmanger. Two quickies. Where do they go in the draft and playoffs next year? I think so. Playoffs next year, I think they battle for that 8 seed, but they're going to be battling a healthy Utah, which will be a challenge. Yeah, Dallas could drop out quite easily. The Pelicans might be ready to go back and challenge. So that 8 spot will be a tough one. Where do they go in the draft? I'm going to assume you mean which position do they go for in the NBA draft. They need shooting. So they need shooting. I think they go with a backup guard or a shooting guard. I think they go Buddy Hield. I think they go Jamal Murray. Personally, I take Murray just because he's that. Look, he is younger. They could go Chris Dunn as a backup point guard, but I would prefer they get some more shooting. Dunn can't shoot, whereas Murray and Hield both can. Murray would be the guy that I would want at pick 5 if he was around. If Dragon Bender's there at pick 5, he's the guy that I'm taking. I talked about the need for them to stretch the floor a bit, and Gorgie Jen can do that to a degree, but Bender would be a great option to me if he was available at 5. But if I'm the Celtics, I'm probably taking Bender at 3. Tibbs just cleared house in the office. What are the chances he brings in old players like Noah? And that comes from Mediterranean Marvel, who's on Twitter at Marvelarinos. Is Noah going to want to come in and play as the backup to Towns? I'd say there's zero chance that Noah does that. Maybe he does, but there's no way that Noah's going to go, yeah, I'm going to Minnesota to play under Tibbs because I loved him so much. Great, but then you're going to play me 18 minutes a night? Nah, no thanks. He'll have better offers than that. He'll have better offer to stay in Chicago because Pau Gasol will be gone, and Noah can probably play 28 minutes in Chicago. There's a chance, but there's probably zero chance, to be honest. Maybe 1% chance that Noah comes to Minnesota, because there is no chance that he is our starting. Drew K on Twitter at DrewK11. He says, this is not a question, just a comment. Isn't it interesting how much noise people make about Buddy Hield's age when he is the same age as Dunn? That is very interesting. And we talk about, you know, Hield being an older guy as a senior, and that's probably why I'd go Jamal Murray, because he is only a freshman, but... And what these players who are seniors, you can get some instant production out of them, and it doesn't worry me all that much. Danny Triella, he says, as an owner of Zach LaVine, what is his value in Dynasty, and what at his max potential do you see him coming at stat-wise and rank? He can be a top 50 player, no doubt to me, he can be, but he's a bit shaky in terms of getting there, as we talked about earlier. Dean Johnny Faulkner on Facebook. Towns, Wiggins, and LaVine have a real shot at a playoff run next season if management brings in some veteran talent to help them out. Who do you see the Wolves dropping to make some room for free agents? Muhammad, Pekovic, Prince? Prince is done. Muhammad, yeah, is definitely a candidate to go. Pekovic who's going to take that contract on? You have to give up assets to get rid of that contract, so I can't see him going unless they decide to stretch him, which is a possibility. I really doubt that happens though, but Prince is toast and Muhammad is definitely an option to go away. John Murphy with another question. Do you think Rubio will ever shoot over 40%? Yes, I do. And will he always require a punt field goal percentage build in head-to-head leagues? No, he won't. He didn't necessarily require... It's probably advantageous to have had it this season, but he didn't 100% require it this season. So no, you don't always have to punt field goal with Rubio because he takes so few attempts. And yes, I think that next season he can be a 40% shooter. Juan Lin. And his question, I'm going to assume it's regarding Carl Anthony Towns because it's the player whose picture I had up. He says, do you draft him ahead of Boogie and Anthony Davis? That's tough. At this point, I probably wouldn't. I really love Boogie. I could understand going Towns over Boogie. I don't do it over. Davis copped a lot of shit last season. He was still a tremendously good player. He still was ranked well ahead of Towns and Cousins. If it's just a straight-up redraft league, I probably don't go ahead of him over Davis. In terms of Cousins, with Dave Yeager in at Sacramento, I think that Cousins is primed for a massive, massive season, which we'll talk about the Kings in the next couple of days. I probably don't go with Towns over him, but that might be a question I throw out on Twitter for you guys to vote on, so that's going to be interesting. Joseph Diffenbach says, who are some free agent primitive shooters that the Wolves could add to space out the floor? Well, I think that they target that in the draft. First off, as I said, with Hield and Jamal Murray is probably the two targets that I like them to go for. And Bender even there, if he's available at four. Perimeter shooters, I don't really think they're going to get anyone as a starting caliber player to come in as a shooter. They can get a backup guy. A guy I think would be really interesting to come in as a backup one and two on this team is Jeremy Lin. I don't know if he'd like to come in. I'd really like to see what he could do running some pick and rolls with Towns. He'd be a really interesting player for them to bring in. Not that he's a great shooter, but he is an option. I think that they need to address it more with that fifth pick and get some scoring in that way. But they do need some sort of shooting on this team. Kent Bazemore, probably not the option that I would be going for. Aaron Aflalo in a backup role, if he opts out, not sure he's going to want the backup role, and he's not really a good shooter, and you know my opinions on Aflalo. I'm not a massive Aflalo fan myself. Other guys they could bring in. Yeah, there's not huge amounts out there that's really appealing to me at this point for this team. There are going to be some guys, obviously, that become available, but I think that they should be looking to get that backup role in a rookie and start to develop them. That's the way that I'd be looking at it at this point. All right, we are done for this podcast, guys. If you haven't checked out the other ones, we've done the Lakers, the Sixers, the Nets, and the Suns. So you can always find those in the archives on audio stuff, iTunes, RSS feeds, Stitcher, and of course on YouTube. The last one we did was the Nets, so make sure you're checking that one out. And I've got some pretty interesting thoughts on Chris McCullough and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson in that one. Leave a review on iTunes if you are so inclined. It helps the show out tremendously, as does visiting lootcrate.com/redrock. Of course, Basketball Monster, we're still offering all of our DFS projections through the end of the conference finals. Enjoy the conference finals. Enjoy the content that goes up at hardwoodparoxysm.com. Enjoy all these podcasts and shows, as I hope you guys do. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.